It's my pleasure to welcome back into our studios David Clement, the choral director for University Singers Masterworks Chorus, a concert chorus, and maybe some new ensembles coming up here at New Mexico State University. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much, Lyra.
Good to see you and good to have you here. So you're the new choral director, and you've got a concert coming up this weekend, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. I didn't get to have you here for the first concert. So tell us a little bit about your goals for the orchestra and how you've put together the year's worth of concerts. And you've got some very major works coming up.
Yes, thank you. We have worked to put together a program for the year that focuses on the themes of light and life and newness and looking forward. And we've tried to sprinkle that theme in the various concerts throughout the year, and to have a wide variety of different musical styles that we are using within each concert. So you will come to a concert such as the University of Singers concert that we had on October 30th, and we'll have a piece such as an Omanium Mysterium of Vittoria from the early Baroque period, mixed next to a piece that we did that is much more contemporary. It's about 5 years old, that takes two different pieces of music that may each be well known in different environments, and it's actually a piece that we're doing on the program this weekend. It's entitled "Lo, How a Rose" / "The Rose," and for those people who know "Lo, How a Rose," it's a very commonly done Advent Christmas piece, but it's been mixed together in a kind of a so-called collage type of piece with the well-known pop melody called "The Rose" that Bette Midler made famous many years ago. And it kind of blurs the lines between classical and popular musical styles, and is a piece that the University Singers have really enjoyed doing, and I think people will really be very interested in hearing again this coming weekend.
Well, and it's right in tune, so to speak, with our era of music, which is really about blurring the boundaries and letting music flow across genres and audiences who might be think that they only like one kind or two kinds or don't like a particular kind, realizing that it's all music.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I think one of the best comments that came after our last concert was someone said to me, I brought my boyfriend, and he always falls asleep in classical concerts, but he was on the edge of his seat waiting for what came next, what comes next, and programming a lot of variety, making sure that the students and community members alike, depending on the ensemble, have the opportunity to experience a wide variety of styles, all is classically based, but that really allow people to sing pieces of music that they may not have heard before in many cases, and I think every program that you do has to have a lot of variety in it to keep people on the edge of their seat, mm-hmm. literally.
And that the October concert was extraordinary. There were many, many songs that the students and the singers had all memorized, mm-hmm. and you know, we were sort of calculating how many weeks they had to learn an awful lot of music, and so I congratulate you on preparing them so beautifully and to the point where it was all memorized, or much of it was memorized.
Thank you. Yeah, over the years have done many different concerts of different types of choral ensembles, and it's clear to me that when it's possible to be auditioned, to be memorized, people are so much more focused on both the conductor's gestures and what he or she is trying to get out of them, but also on the music, and they really learn to live in the moment and not dwell with their face looking down at their music, and they just share it much more effectively and much more musically in most cases when they're not having their music in hand.
Well, I think that goes for any musician, really. If you're able to memorize it, you're going to be focused on the music in a deeper way than if those notes happen to be there on the page.
Right.
And your mind can wander for a moment as long as you keep singing.
You got it. And then there is a certain fear factor that enters in when you don't have the safety of the printed music in front of you. But if you are so confident in your knowledge of your notes and rhythms and the all musical details, then it frees you up in many ways as well.
So walk us through the first moments of a rehearsal when you're just starting a whole new program. How much of the music of the next program do you introduce to the singers right away? And then what do you assign them so that they are, how fast, for instance, do they have to memorize this? Or is that the last stage?
I definitely make sure on day one that if a piece is to be memorized, that I make it clear that that is the case, because I don't want that kind of thing to come up as a surprise the last minute, because it takes a while for our minds to take it all in. And I try to remind people every week that that is our ultimate goal. So let's just give it a try and take one page or a phrase, whatever, and just try to memorize it. And that really helps people get on the right track from the very beginning. In the opening rehearsals, I like to make sure that if we're doing several larger choral works, which we are doing in the spring concert, for instance, I want to make sure that we experience as a group a little taste of each piece that gives them a good feel for the piece, gets them excited by what the piece holds for them, and say, you know, this is the ultimate goal. And I hope you'll come along for the ride with me, and just to get them excited. So they walk out of that room going, oh, that sounds like a really cool piece. I can't wait to bite into it next week and the weeks after that, and to really wrestle it and make it our own, and be ready for a performance.
So when you're ready to open the music with the whole group and give them a sense of it, do they just sight read it? Do you play them a recording? Do you play it for them on the piano and sing a few parts? How do they first hear it?
It kind of varies from piece to piece. I tend not, in general, to like to play a recording. Now, in this day and age of YouTube, you can find almost anything out there, no matter how new the piece may be. but very often, people start from the very beginning basing their interpretation of a piece based on what someone else did. And I've told the story many times to students that when I was going to college, you know, CDs were just coming into play here, and teachers were very strongly making it clear that they, under no circumstances, wanted you to first go to a recording to listen to a piece. They wanted you to be able to play that piece through for yourself on the piano. They wanted you to understand what the piece was about, to do some research about the history of it, the language, the reasons it was written, anything that helps you become a better interpreter. And so it should be a while before you listen to a piece. Now, there are some exceptions where a piece is so unusual to most ears in that ensemble that I will maybe give them a little flavor of it, because we want them, as I said, to get excited about the piece. And sometimes pieces seem so daunting, overwhelming at the first that people can turn off and say, oh, I can't do this. And that's the last thing you want to have them feel. But occasionally a piece might be played. Most of the time I'd like to, sight reading is so crucial in any musician's ability to embrace new music and to do a lot of it if you're a very active musician. And I'd like to help all singers, no matter how much experience they have singing, get to a point where they feel that that given experience, that semester or that year, has really helped them emerge as a stronger sight reader. And so I do as many things as I can to help push that process, and hopefully people will really get to a point where they say, I'm a better musician because of that. And as I say, sometimes you have to get a little down and dirty and you have to make huge mistakes, but we're all doing it together, and that's part of the process, and that's a good thing. So
I'm speaking with David Clement, the choral director of the University Singers and Masterworks Chorus. University Singers made up of students, Masterworks Chorus, also members of the community, and it's on and are both auditioned.
Correct. Both University Singers and Masterworks are auditioned groups. Masterworks does have a wonderful combination of community members in addition to students, and really lends a lot of experiential strength to the group when you're doing large masterwork types of pieces that require lots of singing and long periods of time where you're standing and singing. It's helpful to have that experience that comes from community members. But the experience levels in the community members ranges from just a few years experience to people who have been singing for 40, 50, maybe 60 years post-college. So it's all over the place, and that really makes for a very healthy and exciting, vibrant community.
You've programmed some massive works this year. Coming up this weekend, the Magnificat of Mendelssohn, and later on in the year, Chichester Psalms of Leonard Bernstein and Mass of the Children by John Rutter, and I'm sure a whole range of shorter works as well. And so we're also dealing with several languages.
Right.
And the diction there, the diction issues within each one. And let's just talk for a minute about the Mendelssohn, which is coming up. Not that frequently recorded or heard.
No, actually, just been very recently published, I think just about 2 years ago.
Oh, okay. That's why I hadn't heard about it.
No, I think I'm aware of only two recordings of the piece, and I just happened upon one this past summer and was looking for a relatively short but extended work with multiple movements. And the Magnificat is a great text for this time of the year. And Mendelssohn wrote this piece when he was 13 years old. And it's just amazing to listen to what this young man, taking his composition classes, lessons with his teacher, was capable of doing. He was extremely fond already at that point in time with the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. And if you were to not know who had written this piece, there are moments when you just sit back and listen and you go, oh, this was Bach. But it's not. So it has all the wonderful opportunities of fugal entrances with lots of fast-moving passages and things that Bach would have done that Mendelssohn was trying his hand at and experiencing and seeing how he could make Bach's style become his own style. And you can see, you know, little parts of how he will become the major composer that he did, even at this young age. And it's a lovely work with several choral movements, some wonderful soloists. They'll be singing from our student membership. And it's just a wonderful piece, about 25 minutes in length.
Huh. And so interesting, because Mendelssohn, of course, became the great champion of Bach and the person who brought his music back into the spotlight.
Exactly.
In Leipzig and then the world.
Yeah. So this is probably the most classical style of piece on the program, but a great one to begin with, and something that one would expect the collegiate level to be singing and sharing with its audience.
Huh, wonderful. David, you mentioned when you were in college, just give us a little bit again about your background, when you started singing and
sure.
When you knew you wanted to be a musician.
Yeah. Well, as the son of a Methodist minister, I grew up in the church, and so music was a huge part of my life at that point. I was a member of my father's church, which was a Methodist church in the heart of Newark, New Jersey, and so the gospel tradition of music was at the forefront of the musical styles that they shared at that particular church. And over the years, I had the opportunity to go to a boys' choir in New York City, the St. Thomas Choir School, which high Anglican style of music, and had three wonderful years there, and that is really the experience that molded me most strongly, I think, and made it clear to me that I had no other choice than music, and choral music was my thing.
High school.
That was actually 6th grade through 8th grade.
Oh, okay.
So at a very young age, went away to boarding school in New York City and had that experience of singing 4 or 5 services a week, several concerts a year, some choir tour to England at the end of my time there. And it was just the opportunity that makes you realize that you are capable of so much. And you need to do it very quickly as you're doing 8 or 9 new pieces of music every single week. So it really tests your ability to learn quickly, have a good ear, good sight reading, and all experiences that have helped me realize that when I'm working with a choir, no matter what age or what experience, that they are capable of doing everything and more than they perhaps thought when they came in the door, and that's always my goal.
Yeah, that is so important to raise the bar and let people strive for something better and greater in their music, because I think that's what makes people better musicians.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Really,
it's always really good to have that goal.
Challenge them. So how far away were you when you were at boarding school in New York from your family?
About an hour away.
Oh, okay.
And we would go home about every third weekend for one night. And that was hard. But it was clear that the experience was so uniquely wonderful that I really had no choice. It was the best thing. And I'm just glad that I had parents who were willing to say goodbye to their sixth grade son and have him go away and do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very, very formative years for me.
Yeah. And then later on, you went to?
I went to Oberlin Conservatory of Music and majored in voice. At that time, actually, I had a feeling that I was hoping that maybe Broadway would be my goal, and loved doing musical theater, but was taking classical vocal training at the conservatory. And then I took my first conducting class, and I realized, oh, maybe this is it instead. And that has been my primary focus for years now.
Yeah, ever since. Wonderful. David Clement is my guest today, and we're talking about the various concerts coming up later this year with the University Chorus, University Singers, the Masterworks Chorus. The Concert Chorus, which is a girls or a women's choir.
Correct.
And then you're going to be starting a men's chorus.
We are starting a men's choir, yes. The men's choir, at this point, just called men's choir. It will be a course that can be taken for credit by students. It at this point may not have community involvement. We're still forming exactly how that will work. But it's an opportunity for male singers who may not have sung before in a choral environment to come in and experience everything that it is to sing with other men at the same time, and to gain comfort and musical experience, and just to help them realize that they're capable of doing some singing, and perhaps they should do it more often. As you might imagine, having male singers in choirs is one of the hardest things to have enough of. We're constantly looking for male singers who should join your choirs. This, I think, is a great way to plant some seeds and to get people working in that direction, and hopefully it will amount to even more men singing at all levels of our choir program, both unauditioned and auditioned groups, and to grow the program in general.
David Clement will be conducting this weekend the University Singers, the Masterworks Chorus, and the Concert Chorus?
Correct.
In two concerts, Friday night at 7:30 and Saturday afternoon at 3 at the Atkinson Recital Hall. Thanks so much for joining us today, David Clement.